Thank you and hello, everyone. The meetings have been very productive, very enjoyable for me, and I have all of you to thank and our fellow attendees for the great sessions and great discussion. Today, I'm really delighted to be speaking on behalf of a terrific group of collaborators, led first by Dana Hilfinger, a former, now recently completed graduate student in our lab, and my colleagues Joe Sheerans and Shiri Kubota, both also of Ohio State University and of the Horticulture and Crop Science Department. So we have a very specific interest in what is called fall to spring production, especially in the mid to upper latitudes where we are located. And this is a production period during which many growers and others would not necessarily expect production to be possible, but it has been shown over and over again to be possible, if not desirable. Essentially, what we are attempting to secure are the proper opportunities for growers to seed and or transplant in the fall and be harvesting through the fall into the winter and to the very, very early spring. So this is the time period during which this experiment was conducted. Why that time period exactly? Well, it's typified by very large daily fluctuations in temperature and other environmental conditions, but certainly temperature is among them. The values, the absolute values of those temperatures are far below what we would call the linear response range to growth, and the variation, the diurnal variation, is very, very inconsistent. So from one day to the next, especially in these particular locations, the diurnal variation can be dramatic, often exceeding 25 degrees centigrade from morning to night, from the high to low, and from day to day, a shift in those of the same magnitude. So more precisely, we are studying the abiotic conditions outside the high tunnel, the abiotic conditions inside the high tunnel, including as a function of how growers will manage that internal environment, the condition of the crop, the farming outcomes in an extension context, and then how those farming outcomes influence grower decisions, and then to repeat the cycle. And we feel like that this particular cycle, from abiotic conditions outside the high tunnel to revised farming decisions or grower decisions, has definite implications for plant biology and horticultural science, and certainly for crop production and business. So Dana had three specific research objectives, but I'll be reporting on only one of them today specifically, and that is a third one. What were the panelists' responses to the same lettuce that were grown differently in the high tunnel? The experimental system that was used relied on the use of film and or fabric to create microenvironments within the high tunnel across a day, using a daily pattern. So we had four major treatments, including the uncovered control, a treatment that involved the use of film only during the day and fabric at night, row cover or the fabric at night only, and then both being used as well. And so the schematic looks a little bit like this. From 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., the high tunnels may look like it does at the top, beginning about 7 days after seeding or transplanting and continuing for 7 weeks. And then from 5 p.m. to 9 a.m. the next morning, it looked as it does in the lower photo, in which only the tunnels being called to be covered are covered while the remainder are uncovered. The expected influence on the temperature are as shown here. We expected measurable, statistically significant differences in temperature in both the film covered treatment, the row cover covered treatment, and the film plus row cover covered treatment. And the subplots were seeded or transplanted at the dates shown, two fall runs of this experiment, two spring runs of this experiment, and we took weekly quadrat pictures. We also sampled destructively 4 and 7 weeks after initiating the treatments. Now, again, I'm emphasizing that we had three experimental objectives, but I'm reporting on only one of them today. But I'll go very quickly through the results from the first set of two objectives. The treatment effects on the temperature were consistent with expectations. There was clear separation in the daily average, the diurnal range, cumulative thermal time across the entire study period. In effect, the row covering and plastic film covered treatments resulted in the expected outcomes. Those changes were frequently significant. We did not experience a year by treatment interaction, and biomass was negatively correlated with anthocyanin concentration, which I'll get to here in just a moment. And this panel plus the next one are just two examples of visual appearance of the lettuce at 1, 4, and 7 weeks after transplanting in the fall with the 4 treatments across the top, film plus row cover, film only, row cover only, and uncovered. You'll notice not only the abundance of the biomass, but also its color. In the fall, contrast that with the appearance in the spring, and you see a very clear seasonal effect, and you also see a very clear treatment effect on those same parameters. So again, that's about all I will say about the biomass yield and thermal data as well. Our true interest right now is in the sensory evaluation conducted by untrained panelists at week 7 in both fall of 18 and spring of 2019, in which 3 tests were performed, a discrimination test, and a color test, and a preference test, in which lettuces grown exactly as I've shown you earlier were placed in front of untrained panelists with 3 different types of data interest, the discrimination, the preference, and the color intensity and distribution rankings. And they were asked to complete the ballot, which they did. The samples were very, very carefully prepared, transported to the evaluation sites. And in the case of the preference test, that lettuce that we grew was mixed with a mescaline mix that was store-bought, which was used as a bit of a matrix to support the presentation of the red lettuce which we grew. The discrimination test is a triangle test, and you might be familiar with that. This is where the panelist identifies the odd sample from the group of 3 that they're given, and they must guess. Even if they do not know if there's a difference, they must guess, because then we will perform the chi-square test to determine if they could tell the difference based on chance alone. The color ranking tests include rank for overall color intensity and then the distribution of that same color from a 1 to 4 scale. And the preference test is exactly as it sounds. Which one do they prefer when that red lettuce, which we grew as part of the experiment that I described earlier, was mixed with a mescaline mix? And their categories were complexity, the color vibrancy, shininess, and the overall appearance. And so now to the results. Fresh weight definitely increased as a function of treatment, or decreased. It was a function of treatment in both seasons. I'm sharing this data with you only so you can help validate the sensory evaluations that are to come. The anthocyanin concentrations also differed across treatments and in both seasons. No time to elaborate on those specific differences here. But what I'd like to point out as far as the discrimination tests are that the panelists correctly identified the different sample in all but 2 of the treatment comparisons, and there were 6 completed, if you remember, and the ones that were not identified as different are circled. So these particular sets are the 2 that they could not tell the difference based on this chi-square test, essentially. So those lettuces, the panelists were unable to discriminate. As far as which parameters of the lettuces could be discriminated, dependent on the instrument being used and whether that was a laboratory instrument or the human eye. And some of you in this area are very familiar with the fact that some parameters can be differentiated much more reliably by the human than a machine. Okay? Then these data and our experience underscore that. The red intensity ranking also was a function of treatment. From the most intense, the lower the value here, the more intense the red. And you can see that although the film and row cover treatment produced the most biomass, it was rated as the least intensely colored red sample, for example. Same way with the even distribution rank. Was this red color evenly distributed throughout the product? It was not, at least within the film and row cover treatment. It was the least evenly distributed. And as far as for at least for many extension audiences and grower audiences, which one do the panelists prefer? Despite being able to discriminate between samples, despite ranking them differently according to color intensity and distribution, there was very little separation for preference testing. Again, this is based only on a visual assessment. So the position of the red dots, as you see there, and then the film uncovered, film row cover and row cover, the position of those red dots indicate whether or not they were able to differentiate, whether or not they displayed a difference in their preference for the material. So, ranked directly, the sample from the uncovered plots was preferred over sample from the plots covered with film and row cover, and there are examples of this here. Keep in mind that everything, for most part, that you're seeing green here is from the mescaline mix, and everything you're seeing is red is the lettuces that Dana grew. So in summary, there are two findings I'll share with you before closing. The panelists distinguished between lettuce grown under subtly different microenvironments. We created these microenvironments with different coverings within the high tunnel, but they did not report a strong preference for lettuces from a specific microenvironment. And secondly, as I alluded to just a moment ago, the human eye, in this case our panelists, was more capable of detecting differences in pigmentation than the laboratory methods and instruments, something that is very much worthy of being followed up on. We'd like to thank the sponsors of this work, being University and College of Food, Ag, and Environmental Sciences Fellowships, and the assistance of a great team of people listed here that assisted in all aspects of this work.